He taught Jordan how to dunk and throw a brick. He tips exclusively in $2 bills. Warren Buffett joined Twitter just to read his tweets. Dr. Gene asks him financial questions. He is Sweet Tea Teddy P., the most interesting chartered financial analyst in Kennesaw.
I don't always host a radio show, but when I do, it's Money Talks. Stay invested, my friends. Okay, we're back.
Two Buck Teddy.
Two Buck Teddy, that's right, buddy. Better than Two Buck Chuck,
I guess.
This is Money Talks, and this is our last segment. Guys, I got Troy Harmon and Ben Crow here. I'm Teddy Parrish, and we're going to go through a couple more questions and probably take on a few other items before we're out of here. So you got a full 9 minutes and 20 seconds, so don't move. We got a question from Alex Walker in Kennesaw, guys.
Yes, I believe so. Let's see here. He's got a tax-related question. I interned in England this year. I was paid and I also purchased shares of the company stock while I was there. I'm starting to gather my information for taxes this year, and I hope you could shed some light on the foreign tax credit for me. Well,
a bloody tax credit.
Yeah, Alex, you just need to call me. Don't worry about it. We'll get it taken care of. But if you want to attempt to do this yourself, foreign taxes are pretty common. And not only for those that, you know, have worked overseas, that, you know, that's kind of another realm, and there's some foreign income exclusion, and there's some other things that go along with it or potential tax issues. But one thing that's very common is to own an international security and pay foreign taxes on your investments.
Right.
So, you know, you look at your 1099, and if you have any ADRs in there, in most cases you're going to see a foreign tax paid. So it's something that comes up quite frequently.
That'd be on the dividend or the
– Yeah, on the 1099.
If you sold it.
No. This is on dividends. So
okay.
Whenever
just
you didn't have to, you know, a 1099-B reports proceeds, but a DIV reports dividends,
okay.
And it'll break out, and it'll actually, there's a box on there that shows you foreign tax paid.
Right.
So basically, you got a choice when this comes up. Taxes can be an itemized deduction, which would go to Schedule A, right? Or you can take a credit. There's a foreign tax credit for foreign taxes paid. So which one, you think you'd be better off with, the Schedule A deduction or the credit?
I'm going to see.
Something.
Take the Schedule A. Yeah.
No. All right. So why wouldn't you want the deduction?
An accountant.
Okay. You want the credit because what's the difference? A tax credit is a dollar-for-dollar
yep.
offset against your liability, right?
Yeah.
Whereas a deduction is worth your marginal tax bracket.
Lowers your deduction.
So, all right. But in order to get the credit, you have to do a little more work. There's an 1116, which is a foreign tax credit form you need to fill out in order to take that credit. So what comes up a lot of times is how much is it? Because if it's a dollar, you know, maybe you stick it on Schedule A and take it as a deduction instead of spending an hour trying to figure out the 1116 and report everything on there. So, you know, it's kind of a cost-benefit thing. So a lot of times you'll see some small numbers, but if you have a significant amount of money invested in international securities, this is something you definitely want to take the credit for because it will offset the taxes you're paying.
So is this something you do for your clients?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And you've learned two things here, Ted. You've learned not only which option to take, but you've also learned this is why Ben does my taxes too. Because obviously I failed the test.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I failed. All right.
Very good. What's next?
We have a question here from Darren Paul from Atlanta. It says, I have been told that I am too heavily invested in international funds. When is a good time to rebalance, and do I just do it all at once or gradually? Part of that I'll leave for Ben, but I will tell you that just about any investment in international stocks outside the domestic economy in 2013 was too much. You saw a lot of cases where, you know, the international stocks underperformed the U.S.
Yeah.
We had 32% gain in 2013.
What was the EAFE? You know, the EAFE is a common benchmark for foreign securities. Well, you know, it was up in the 20s or something
last year.
And then you had
right.
domestic markets were up,
right.
you know, a good bit more than that.
And given that situation, you're really going to, you know, the market corrected some of your overweight, I would assume,
oh, yeah,
in 2013, because your domestic holdings
right
would have bloated more so than than your international stuff. So in that, I would, you know, not knowing what percentage you hold, I would normally say you should hold between 5 and 15%. And as for when to rebalance, I would say
You know, that's on a case-by-case.
It really
is. I think, Troy, because, you know, how overweight are you? How big of a deal is it to move this quickly? Is it your international in one stock or a mutual fund or something, a pool? You know, how much diversification do you have on
the international side? What's your overlap, which a lot of people don't take notice of?
Well, and the other thing is you're going to have to sell something in order to buy that if you're fully invested.
Potentially.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you split that up if it's,
yeah,
you know, if it's year in, you need to do 10%, and then maybe you do a little this year, a little next year.
Probably the easiest case is if it's in an IRA, and you don't have tax consequences at all. But I mean, it's a more complicated question than we can really answer for you specifically. But these are all the things that you'd want to think about, and probably one of the last pieces. And Ben, I'll throw this over to you as far as how do you do it: lump sum or roll it in?
Lump sum or roll it in?
Yeah, you know, like dollar cost averaging, or do you just jump out?
Well, you know, basically,
in?
I think if a client is invested
already,
you know, if you're already in the market, I do not see any, you know, to make the decision to come out of the market and then go back in gradually is not a lateral move, is it?
No,
I mean,
it's not.
That's essentially market timing, is it not?
That's true.
I mean, that is a timing decision. So if you're 100% invested in equities and you just need to make changes, then you stay invested as long as it's appropriate for your time horizon, and that's where you need to be with your allocation.
Right, and
this new money, you know, you get a bonus this year, and you know, you're time to put some money to work. You know, maybe you average in with that money, but that's new money going into the portfolio. A little bit different mindset sometimes with how quickly you put that to work.
Sure. You should always assume that you made the initial decision for some reason. There was something behind that decision that you made. So if your allocation is off and you're fully invested, as Ben said, fix it.
Right.
Yeah, and many people, like you said, Troy, because the U.S. performed so well last year, they have the exact opposite situation where they may need to rebalance their allocation in domestic.
Selling something a little high, buying something hasn't done so well is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not. No, it's not. So we got another question here we can get to quickly, and it was Colt Darcy from Snailville. I own Universal Corp and British American Tobacco. I was looking to trim my exposure to the industry. Should I sell one or trim both? Well, we've owned tobacco companies in the past, and currently in a couple of our portfolios, we own a couple. Right now, we own Lorillard.
Yep.
What's the other one?
Altria. We also own Reynolds America.
Yeah, Reynolds America. And both of those companies have a higher dividend yield than the ones that you own right here, but that wasn't your question. You wanted to trim that area. I would suggest trimming the one that has both are high quality, by the way.
Right, yeah, both meet
investment criteria. But Universal Corp is growing its earnings and its dividend less than British American Tobacco. British American Tobacco looks like its dividend is going to grow, projected to grow by 7%, and its earnings are going to grow by about 7%. Universal Corp, you got 4% and 4% on each. Well, 4% earnings and 3% dividend growth. Also, what you have to keep in mind with these tobacco companies, they're not going to grow extremely fast. Yep. And so, in other words, with interest rates going up, these stocks will probably act more like a bond.
Yeah. The price would go the other direction.
In the tobacco industry, I mean, with all these smoke e-cigarettes and stuff, I mean, are they going into this area? And, I mean, are they making a move into this?
I seem to be seeing stores
popping up, and this seems to be a quite the trend these days. But
fad,
are
is that what you're calling?
Well, I don't know. Is it a fad, or are the big guys jumping on board with this?
The bigger issue is those e-cigarettes are still tobacco-based. I mean, you still have the same carcinogens that are in a cigarette, and they're still going to be right under the radar. I'll tell you, I think
But
that,
aren't these guys getting involved, the bigger
players?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they are. So. But, again, I mean, long-term growth aspects, I'd have to agree with Ted. They're probably You know, they're not going to grow like a technology stock for the next 5 years or 10 years or especially 20 years.
And what you brought up there is probably going to be an issue for the, you know, the e-cigarettes. I mean, there's some pending litigation and rulings from the government on that.
Yeah.
Which may be negative.
Oh, yeah.
This is Money Talks. Have a great weekend. See you next week.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.